Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Nearly half of all children in India under 3 are underweight. 80% are anemic. This means over 30 million children, a population the size of Canada, not getting enough food, despite over 2 decades of rapid economic growth. Well, it turns out over those same decades, poor Indians have been eating less food, and the food they do eat is worse in quality. Now, this isn't the famine of a couple of generations ago when Indians were starving. Investment in agriculture eradicated that. But why are millions malnourished today, and what does that feel like? Bloomberg News reporter Mehul Srivastava returned to his ancestral town to find out. He joins us on Skype from New Delhi. And Mehul, you went to a village several hundred miles east of Delhi and lived with a poor family. So what was that like?
It was amazing when you go back. It's in a way like going back in time because not much has improved there. They have some electricity. They have some running water, but their diets have actually gotten worse. I mean, I convinced this family that if I stayed with them and I gave them about 50 cents a day, would they add me on to their meals? And his wife was happy to do that. So for about two and a half weeks that I lived in that village, I ate all my meals with them. They were pretty meager meals, mostly very dry, very thick rotis.
Rotis, R-O-T-I-S. This is a bread?
Yes, it's a bread, and it's basically made out of some of the coarsest wheat that they could afford. You grind it up as much as possible, but you can tell the difference. It's both less nutritional value, and it doesn't really taste very good, so there's not a lot of variety in your diet.
Well, you go on to explain the rest of the diet. It's pretty much a gruel. It's horrendous. Maybe it has a certain amount of calories, but it's got no protein, to the extent that you felt tall in this village. These people were actually smaller, shorter than they should be. The infants and children had that kind of loose skin that children who aren't getting any protein have.
It's a disease called kwashiorkor. It was discovered in Ghana in the 30s, and it means to be dethroned. Essentially, when a mother would have another child, the first child wouldn't be able to finish his breastfeeding cycle and would then be moved on to a diet with very little nutritional value, especially proteins. It causes a lot of water to be stored in the body and causes distended bellies, and the skin becomes very, when you touch it, it's very dry and rough to the touch as compared to what a baby's skin, you know, in America, you'd say soft as a baby's skin. Well, these babies' skin was not soft at all. Mm. And for the adults, protein is almost non-existent in their diet because for some of them, they're vegetarian, so they need to eat really high quality lentils, and they don't have that. The family I lived with, they were not vegetarian, but meat costs a lot of money. Eggs cost a lot of money. Milk costs a lot of money. You're getting very little nutrients. You're getting very little vitamins. You're getting very little of the other stuff that keeps your body healthy. And then protein, you don't have any at all. I was over a foot taller than most of the people there.
Well, there's other impacts of this lack of food. The father in the family works for pennies a day, which is why that 50 cents you gave them seemed like a lot, because he might make $1.75 for doing hard labor for all day. You went with him to do this. And now that you're on their diet, you felt the lethargy they felt. I mean, they can hardly work. They're so exhausted. You say it's been a year since he ate meat, 8 months since he was able to catch a fish, 6 months since he'd had an egg. So he's feeling that. He can barely work. The caste system still exists in some ways. You met a village leader who had a servant with tea and biscuits. What's the problem here? I found myself wondering, can't they go plant a crop? Or why isn't the government in India, which has been doing, you know, this country's been doing so well, why isn't that filtering down? Why is this happening?
Yeah, there's a big why, and then there's a small why. The small why is a collection of different problems. The caste system means that a lot of these people either don't own land or they can't work certain jobs or they weren't educated as kids. The government is corrupt. The government has a $14 billion program to bring food to the poor. We found that billions of dollars of food was being stolen and sent off to places like Bangladesh and Nepal and Sierra Leone to be sold at above market rate. There's not a lot of irrigation. Land holdings are small. That's a small why. That's what keeps a man like Ghanshyam, whose family I lived with, hungry. The big why is that all of these things are known. I didn't discover anything new when I went to this village. This has been well known and established over time that these are the reasons why India as a whole isn't able to feed its people. The big why don't they fix it? It just seems like there is a lethargy in the government. There is a lack of political will. There's a lack of desire to kind of grab this problem head on and to put the resources needed to solve it.
Well, you say that even as India has grown, the number of calories for the poor has gone down.
Yeah, that's a very fascinating and painful nutrition paradox that's bedeviling India right now. There's theories. The theory that I find most convincing is that if you want to increase your income in India, you have to leave the village and you have to move to a city. You leave behind a significant amount of support networks, your grandparents, your cousins, maybe a free government school, free housing. So you move to the city of Bombay or Delhi or Calcutta, where you increase your income to about $100 a month. But to get to the $100 a month, you have to send your kids to a private school. You're living in a slum, so you're falling sick more often. You have to get a cell phone. You have to use public transport, which means that at the end, the amount of money that you have left over for food is actually less than you had when you were living in the village.
You lived that life for a short while, but you did. How did that feel? Could you feel it?
It is as far away from a middle-class global citizen's life as you can imagine. There's no running water, so you have to end up walking to a field early in the morning to clear your bowels. There's no electricity. So in June, it was 48, 49 degrees Celsius. That's over 115, 120 Fahrenheit. And you're expected to work at that temperature while living in a mud hut, while drinking dirty water, while having a poor diet. And it's a very, very physically demanding life. And when you're doing that on 1,700, 1,800 calories a day, you simply destroy your body.
Could you feel your body shutting down?
I mean, to be honest, I'm not in very good shape to begin with. So I lost about 5 or 7 pounds while I was there. But you know when you're on that diet, you know when these are the conditions that you're working in, you just slow down. You do things a lot slower. It takes a lot longer to recover from short bursts of energy. You know, when I went out to a work site where Ghanshyam was working, and 2 hours of physical labor was tops. I couldn't do any more than that. And when you get back, you know, you spend most of your time just trying to recover your strength. There's no going for a run early in the morning or playing basketball with your friends, because you try and conserve every little piece of energy you have.
That's Bloomberg News reporter Mehul Srivastava, speaking to us from New Delhi about living the life of almost starvation in India. We'll link you to his articles at herenow.org. Mehul, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Yeah, Robin, I appreciate this.
Okay, quick heads up. Tomorrow on Here and Now, how two presidents helped journalist Ron Fortier accept his son's Asperger's. Also, we'd love input from you for upcoming segments. Go to hereandnow.org. Let us know, first of all, as we go into the new year, words you'd like to leave behind. They're overused. Like the word like, maybe. Also, questions about wine for the chief wine critic of the New York Times. Send them to hereandnow.org.